Welcome, friends, to the Generations Broadcast. Kevin Swanson, your host, with you today. Adam McManus from theworldview.com with me as well. And Adam, I wanted to interact with you just a little bit on the rise of the cities and the rise of the left. We referred to this a couple of days ago, and I wanted to bring this back because it is interesting that the city has become the bastion of liberalism, and I think there's almost a perfect correlation between the blue-red and the density of populations in various areas in America. If it's red, it's rural. If it's blue, it's city. That's almost a one-to-one. It's hard to find a city in America with, say, less than 50,000 people in residence, and that city is still voting Republican.
No doubt it has a lot to do with the level of indoctrination they've gotten from academia.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. That's a huge part of it. And do understand, friends, that we've seen a massive increase of folks moving into the city since 1960. In 1960, 67% of the world population was in the countryside. Only 33% were in the cities. And that crossover occurred in 2007, which would have been about 47 years later. You got a 50-50 rural city ratio. Then by 2040, which is what, about 15 years off from now, they're expecting it to be 33% in the countryside, 67% in the urban areas, which means what? Which means 67% Democrat and 33% Republican. So that's the direction we're headed. And I think people should be aware of this fact. Now, the big question here is, why are cities so blue? So why do we have to count on the fact that as the urban areas increase over the next, say, 15 years, we are going to see the Democrats, the liberals, the socialists, and the Marxists dominate politics, and Republicans, conservatives, Christians will not even have a shot at competing for leadership.
16 years of indoctrination at the school level with the socialist, humanist, anti-God, pro-evolution, pro gender questioning theory is going to wear anyone down, won't it?
Well, I was reviewing an Atlantic magazine article on why the cities are so blue, and one of the most important reasons offered by this article is that big cities tend to have a higher density of educated individuals. In fact, according to the article, almost 90% of college graduates live in urban areas, and as everybody knows, college graduates tend to be more blue. Those who have been educated in the American institutions, those who have been properly indoctrinated, not just for 10 or 12 years in American public schools, but 16 years in American public schools and public universities, are going to be liberal. The longer you stay in American schools, the more likely you are to be an atheist, the more likely you are to believe in evolution, the more likely you are to believe in abortion, to believe in sexual perversion, because you've been properly indoctrinated in the universities that seem to be the places in which the high priests of humanism dominate, and they are teaching the populace how to think.
They're getting a worldview that's unashamedly secular, anti-God, atheistic, and it becomes a vicious cycle, doesn't it? They have concentration in the cities. That's the few that are having children. That's where they're raising them, and the cities continue to grow. And those that are rural, Republican, Christian, who want to make their way into the city, inevitably get infected. It's almost like a contagious virus, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. The cities are also filled with people who don't get married. So that's, you know, nuclear families tend to congregate into the suburbs and off into the rural areas. So, and the cities, you know, 6, 7, 8% of households in cities are nuclear families. And young people move away from the farms, they go to college, and then they settle in the city. So that's the process. And then they turn Democrat, and the cities turn blue, and then you wind up with Joe Biden as the president of the United States. The cities are filled with people who don't get married. Young people, they grow up on farms, they move to the city, they go to college, and they settle in the city. That's the way it works. That's the way it's been working since 1960. 67% of Americans in rural areas in 1960, now it's closer to 45%, soon to be 33%, and that's pretty much it for the Red Republicans. Also, I think what happens is not only do they get a certain worldview in secular colleges, that is a certain perspective concerning epistemology, metaphysics, and ethics, but they also get a social view in college. And when I say a social view, it's a view of life in that the family is really not that important. The nuclear family, pretty much to be disposed of. And then you get this unaccountable, irresponsible sexual way of life. You live by yourself in an apartment away from family life. And so, you don't have family ties and the family social structure. You don't have opportunities to give up yourself to your siblings or give up yourself to others, denying yourself, taking up the cross daily within the context of the family. But rather, you live the individualistic, selfish pig lifestyle in the city, in the apartment, and rely on pornography, birth control, and abortion to get you by.
Oh, my.
And then after all the sex in the city, you might think about thawing out your frozen eggs and having a baby at 42 years of age. I think that's, and I'm not just kidding here, I'm talking about, the real social scenario that takes place in American cities. This is what it looks like.
I think you've summed it up well. It's really sad. It's such a dead end, isn't it? I mean, the funny thing is, the world screams, this is liberation. Have all the sex you want, sow your wild oats, look at all the pornography you want, lust all you want, and try to push off the results of this premarital sex by using birth control, and when that doesn't work, by killing the baby. What a dead end. Living together, you didn't mention living together. All these couples living together thinking that that's the way to define the relationship, to take it to the next level, quote unquote, when biblically speaking, the next level was you get to know somebody, you date them, God places it upon your heart that you should be married, and you get married. Marriage was once the next level. Now there's this intermediate living in sin, which is the next level, which of course God says in 1 Thessalonians that we should flee from immorality. But what a dead end. I mean, you end up not having children, you end up aborting your children, and you end up having gone through a number of relationships, maybe having a baby on your own through the modern technology that's available today. But it's so sad.
Well, certainly Christians need to oppose all of this. Certainly Christians need to take a position that doesn't conform to this world, but Christians should be transformed by the renewing of their mind, that they would prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. And so we need to be swimming upstream big time against the worldview, the social view that is espoused by the university today. And I'm afraid the Christian college is not that much different from the secular college in the day in which we live, especially when it comes to this social view. Now, there's also another contributing factor as to why cities are so blue. It's not just that. It's how highly educated people that move back into the city and then bring that foreign worldview into the United States and then move us more towards a leftist position over a period of 6 or 7 or 8 presidential elections. Certainly that's happening. But there's also an anonymity in the city. There aren't roots in the city. People get lost in the mega church, or they get lost in the mega city. Cain built the first city east of Eden, where the vagabonds moved in and out of it. Remember that. And the reason for that, of course, is because there was such anonymity in the city. People can hide in the cities. Nobody really knows them down at the local 7-Eleven or down at the local cafe, whereas if you grew up in a small town, you get to know everybody. It's hard to hide who you are. Your reputation, for good or for ill, is pretty much known by those who live around you, and that's not going to happen within the cities. Cities became known for sin. People have told me they go into the big city to have fun. I hear this quite often that, it's boring out here in the country. It's boring out here in the little town where all you get to do is, drink a little coffee down at the cafe and run down to Walmart from time to time. It's just no fun. There's no action. And when they say there's no action, what they're saying is there's no bar. There's no alcohol. There's no opportunity to lose yourself in a society, in a city, prostitution usually doesn't show up on the streets of Elizabeth where I live, and it's kind of even a joke to think about that it would ever wind up down here. But the cities attract sin, and people are attracted to sin, and that's oftentimes why they're attracted to the city, and then the cities turn blue. So that's typically what happens, my friends. And we're going to take a break and come back in just a moment to talk more as to what is happening with the American liberal institutions. That next on Generations.
Attention, homeschool parents. Here at Generations, we know that finding literature curriculum that engages your children's minds and helps them develop a strong Christian worldview can be an overwhelming task. That's why we've developed a Christian discipleship-focused literature curriculum that's centered around the most important work of literature ever written, the Word of God. Not only do our Bible-centric courses seek to place Christ at the head of literature studies, but they will also teach your children how to analyze all literature from a Christian perspective, enabling them to be more than conquerors in today's battle of worldviews. By introducing them to the essential stories of the faith, along with the written works of history's best Christian authors, our literature curriculum provides the bedrock for a firm foundation of faith in the hearts of your children. So, get started today with Generations Christian Discipleship Curriculum and watch your children embark on an incredible journey towards strengthening their faith and discovering the greatest Christian stories ever told. You can learn more and browse our selection of carefully curated works at generations.org/curriculum. That's generations.org/curriculum.
And we are back on the Generations broadcast. Kevin Swanson with you. As the blue cities, the blue states are on the increase, but the cities, as they pervert, as they corrupt themselves, friends, please understand, they rot out as well. There's a disintegration, there's a corruption that happens to the American institutions as America embraces the birth implosions. America embraces a social view that inevitably leads to the breakdown of the nuclear family, the breakdown of marriage, and the breakdown of childbearing. And that kind of thing is pulling apart all of these developed nations right now, including America. So read my book, Epoch, The Rise and Fall of the West, to better understand what is happening to our cities, our nations. But here is a big takeaway for the sons of Issachar who understand the times, and that is that the great liberal institutions are collapsing in America even as we speak. In fact, I come back to college enrollment every year or so on this radio program just to update you as to how the corruption is going, how the disintegration is going with the college scene and the college bubble. You know, the college debt bubble is just exploding even now. In fact, college debt has increased more in the last month than any other month in the history of America. Just check that out. But college enrollment has dropped from 21 million to 17 million in 10 years. That's a 4 million person drop, Adam.
Wow.
That's like losing 400 large Ivy League universities in just 10 years. Wiped off the map. I mean, imagine that. You know, 400 large 10,000 student universities gone in 10 years. Ghost towns.
And yet international enrollment at the same time has doubled to 1 million students. To what do you attribute that?
Well, that's just because Americans aren't going to college. So not only have we lost 4 million persons, we've lost about 1 million persons just trading off Americans attending these universities to the internationals coming in and attending the same university. So that would make what? 4 million plus 1 million would be a 5 million person drop off in American colleges. That's about 25% of the American college population gone in 10 years. Can you say the end? Can you spell the end of American college?
Why is it down? Why are fewer people going to college now?
It's expensive. It's stupid. It's politically correct. It doesn't really contribute much to your economic well-being or the economic well-being of the nation. It is the most overpriced, overvalued product on the market these days.
Wow. What about Hollywood? How is Hollywood impacting the world?
Well, I mean, just think of these institutions. What's going on with these institutions? The college enrollment dropping, what, 5 million in 10 years, and Hollywood's dropped off from, what, $10 billion of box office receipts in 2019 to maybe 500,000 this year? Thus far?
Half a billion.
again, the homosexualized Hollywood, once the leading edge of American culture, since really the 1930s, the homosexualized Hollywood at the bleeding edge of American culture has collapsed in just the last year. Incredible. I mean, what is that? Dropping off from $10 billion of box office receipts to $1 billion inside of 1 year. What is that? A 90% drop off in terms of Hollywood yielding something of a cultural influence on America. That's extraordinary. That's extraordinary. We're looking at the breakdown of American institutions.
But aren't you looking at it from just the perspective of people, warm bodies in the seats of the movie theaters, whereas a lot of these movies are now being streamed almost immediately at home, where for $20 you can rent the movie that's released. They're just looking at it in a different location in their home instead of the box office.
Yeah, but what's happening in the streaming business, and you're talking about streaming business has picked up some, but the streaming business is a vastly decentralized system where people can stream just about anything they want to online. So it's a decentralized system that's replaced the monolithic Hollywood dominance of American culture, and that's all happened in the last year or two. Incredible.
And to what do you attribute that?
Well, God. God's bringing the big Tower of Babel's down. This is what happens. This is the breakdown of American cultural institutions. It's happening all around us, friends. Think of the Boy Scouts. Boy Scout membership has dropped off from 5 million to 2 million between roughly 2010 and 2019, and then down to 1 million in 2020. So it dropped off another 100% in 1 year. The Scouts were, you know, abused homosexually for decades.
The Boy Scouts just had their comeuppance as a judge settled $850 million that they had to pay to the victims of the homosexual scout leaders that they welcomed years ago. So this is an organization that once heralded Christian ethics, then abandoned them, welcomed homosexual scouts, then scout leaders, then transgenders, then girls into the Boy Scouts. It was mass confusion and chaos, and we're seeing the result of it.
You got it. And I think you pretty much summarized what's happened to these American institutions. You corrupt them with these perversions. What happens? You're going to destroy it. And that's precisely what's happening, my friends, to the universities, to Hollywood, to the Boy Scouts. Please understand, the left doesn't just pervert American institutions. The left destroys America. The left destroys a civilization. This is what sin does. This is what the left has done in America. And I think this little dalliance with Sodom is about over. The world passes away with its lusts, but he who does the will of God abides forever. That's 1 John 2. But the point being here, Adam, is we're not going to bring this down. God brings it down. And I think that's what's happening right now.
What about the economic situation? How is that cracking up?
Well, let's update everybody on the economic situation as well, because I think it's important for people to understand what's going on. Of course, the news came out with the $3 trillion of deficit spending that Biden is adding to the national debt this year. It's almost equal to what President Trump did for us last year. The gross federal debt is now at 130% of the GDP. That's up from 60% in 2008. So what is that? Pretty much doubled since just 2008. It's the highest in history, and that's why it's so significant right now, is that it's taken a long time to cross over the debt-to-GDP ratio in World War II, because the GDP drops off during the war, and the amount of government spending it takes to make it through a world war is extraordinary. And so right now, what makes this so important is that we have just exceeded the debt-to-GDP that was upwards of 120% in 1944. Now, we're at 130% of the GDP. And friends, that's way beyond anything that's ever happened in a peacetime situation in the history of the world. We are the fifth highest debt to GDP in the world. We're up there with Japan, Greece, Lebanon, and Italy. Now, when I think about the economy of Greece, Lebanon, Italy and Japan, I'm not thinking these are the sterling economies of the world.
No. And to think that we're in the same arena with them.
These are the nations that are on the fire sale.
Right.
You know, the only thing that's propping them up is maybe just a little bit more debt from the GDP or a little more debt from the EU, but that's about it. Well, also, friends, May was debt month for America. It was the explosion of non-revolving debt. I mentioned this earlier. Student loans, auto loans, upwards of $26 billion surge, the biggest monthly increase on record. The average has hovered around $10 to $12 billion. Well, we got a $26 billion increase for auto and student loans, the largest in history in May of this year. And about 7.5% of Americans are facing eviction within the next 2 months.
Hmm.
About 15% are behind on rent. That's about three times the recent historical average, by the way, for any annual rate of eviction. 7.5% of Americans are facing eviction within the next 2 months. We'll see how that works out. And according to a recent Finder.com survey, only 12% of American workers or 7% of millennials could survive a year without a job. So that's pretty sad. It's interesting that U.S. savings rate is at 7.6% even after all the COVID handouts came along. And that compares to a Mexican savings rate of 16%.
Wow.
So Americans are doing worse than Mexicans when it comes to planning for the future. And that doesn't bode well for the future, Adam.
I didn't think Mexicans saved more than twice what Americans do. That's really astounding. It speaks poorly of us.
It was surprising. Mm-hmm. Surprising, yeah. Now, that could mean that, you know, they make less. So that's a percentage of what they make or a percentage of a part of their spending. I'm not sure exactly how the ratio works for the savings rate, but Mexican saving rate 16%, American saving rate 7.6%. Proverbs 21 verse 20 also ties into this. There is a treasure to be desired and oil in the dwelling of the wise, but a foolish man spends it up.
Mm.
So I think it's critical for Christians to save. And let me just end with this, that we should save. We should save with a mind towards giving, of course, always a mind towards giving. It's always better to give than to receive. The present needs may be somewhat limited, but future needs may require more giving. And so as Christians, I think we should save, not just for ourselves, but for providing for our families, providing for our mothers and grandmothers during their retirement years. I think it's important. Why? Because 1 Timothy chapter 5 and verse 8 is very clear on this, that a man who does not provide for his own family, for his own mother and grandmother in their old age, is worse than an unbeliever, has denied the faith. So it's important for Christians to save, to provide for others, to save for a rainy day, and also to have something for others during a period of a downturn. So let's be savers. Let's be savers. That's critical, I think, for Christians. And let's encourage our children not to be consumers, not to be those like the foolish man who spends it all up. He spends all his treasure on the thing that he wants instead of maintaining some savings for the future.
Plus, we should also encourage believers to invest. I mean, that's the message from the talents. The two invested their talents and doubled what the master had left them, and the one buried his in the backyard and had nothing to show for it.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And so, yeah, part of saving is investing. And the multiplication of talents, of course, that's not just for our finances, but also a spiritual heritage and the gifts that God has given to each of us. Well, we need to wrap up this edition of the Generations broadcast. We brought some biblical principle to bear, and people have asked me, what do you do to prepare for the future? And I just simply say, read the Word of God, disciple your children as you sit in the house, and be sure that you give your children the book of Proverbs. Granted, the book of Proverbs, the wisdom of God in relation to economy and these sorts of things are pretty much ignored by all of our institutions. You go a long way before you find an American university that bases its entire economics program on the book of Proverbs. But I still think we should stumble back to the book of Proverbs, dust off the book, and train our children in the book of Proverbs. If we want to salvage a family, a church, a community, a civilization in the years to come, we will need the wisdom of God to do it. And that's why the core product for the Generations offerings is our Proverbs Bible Study Guides. It's a three-part series available at our website. And friends, it's a Bible study guide series that would be appropriate for reading out loud to your children. anywhere between, say, 9 and 18 years of age, I would say children could handle this material, and there's lots of family discussion questions as well to include in that family time together. So I'd encourage you to our family Bible study guides on the book of Proverbs, available at generations.org. This is Kevin Swanson and Adam McManus, and we invite you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.